And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West. The most haunted city in the country. Well, today's March 21st, 80th day of the year. 285 days remain till the year is over with. You know, a couple of observations I've been meaning to make. You know, I'm a 100% disabled veteran. My medical care is furnished by the VA. The VA has now become the Department of Meetings. It's no longer the Department of Veterans Affairs. They don't care about the Veterans Affairs. They care about their meetings, which are more important than even treating patients. And they got a new trick. I know they've had trouble getting doctors. So now they're referring to nurse practitioners as doctor, which totally misrepresents the issue to the veteran. I've been treated by a very competent doctor in the community, and I was told this past Friday in June I'm being moved back into the VA to, and they gave me the person's name, and I said, but that's a nurse practitioner. Oh, no, that's the same as a doctor. You just don't understand. So you don't have to go to medical school anymore. You can be a nurse, get a PhD in nursing, and you're a doctor. And when I, one person that I had been told was a doctor who'd been around forever, I just found out that he's a nurse practitioner himself. But when I raised that issue, I was told that I was just ignorant. I didn't understand the world. Nurse practitioners are every bit as competent, professional as doctors, and they should be treated as doctors. Now, Texas state law says not just no, but hell no. But in the Department of Meetings, apparently the rules have changed. Somehow we've gone through the rabbit hole with Alice, and we're in Wonderland. Well, as I said, today's March 21st. On this day in 537 was the Siege of Rome. King Vitiges attempts to assault the northern eastern city walls, but repulsed at the Prenestine Gate, known as the Vivarium, by the defenders under the Byzantine generals Bessus and Perennius. Now, Byzantium is the Eastern Roman Empire. Power shifted from the west to the east as time went on. And we had such brilliant Roman emperors as Caligula, Nero. In 630, Emperor Heraclius returns the true cross, one of the holiest Christian relics, to Jerusalem. And I remember the story his mother, I think it was, found it while wandering around the Middle East. 717, Battle of Vincy between Charles Martel and Regenfried. 1152, annulment of the marriage of King Louis VII of France and Queen Eleanor of Aquitaine. 1188, Emperor Antoku accedes to the throne of Japan. 1556, on the day of his execution in Oxford, former Archbishop of Canterbury Thomas Cranmer deviates from the scripted sermon by renouncing the recantations he's made and says, as for the Pope, I refuse him as Christ's enemy and Antichrist with all his false doctrine. And many, many times, folks that have been put in such high positions as the Pope basically believe they are above the law. I know a lot of judges here will tell you very upfront they're above the law. They are the law. Whatever they say is how it's supposed to be. 1788, a fire in New Orleans leaves most of the town in ruins. 1800, with the church leadership driven out of Rome during an armed conflict, Pius VII's crowned Pope in Venice with a temporary papal tiara made of papier mache. 1801, the Battle of Alexandria is fought between British and French forces near the ruins of Nicopolis near Alexandria in Egypt. 1804, Code Napoleon is adapted as French civil law. 1814, Napoleonic Wars. Austrian forces repel the French troops in the Battle of Arcis-sur-Aube. 1844, the Bahia calendar begins. First day of the first year of the Bahia calendar, annually celebrated by members of the Bahia faith as the Bahia New Year, or Nowruz. 1861, Alexander Stevens gives the cornerstone speech. The cornerstone speech, also known as the cornerstone address, was an oration given by Alexander Stevens, Vice President of the Confederate States, at the Athenaeum in Savannah, Georgia, March 21st, 1861. The speech, delivered extemporaneously a few weeks before the Civil War began with the Confederate attack on Fort Sumter, defended slavery as a fundamental and just result of the supposed inferiority of the black race, explained the fundamental differences between the constitutions of the Confederate States and the U.S., enumerated contrasts between Union and Confederate ideologies. While he may have been a great orator, and I was born and bred in the South, I do not hold with a lot of what he had to say. 1871, Otto von Bismarck is appointed as the first chancellor of the German Empire. I think he held that position for 19 years. Also in 1871, journalist Henry Morton Stanley begins his trek to find the missionary and explorer David Livingstone. 1918, World War I, the first phase of the German Spring Offensive, known as Operation Michael, begins. 1919, Hungarian Soviet Republic is established, becoming the first communist government to be formed in Europe after the October Revolution of Russia. You know, interestingly enough, the Bolsheviks would not have taken over had they not had support from the U.S. A lot of industrialists poured money into it. 1921, a new economic policy is implemented by the Bolsheviks in response to the economic failures result of war communism. 1925, the Butler Act prohibits the teaching of human evolution in Tennessee. 1925, Sigmund Rhee is removed from office after being impeached as president of the Provisional Government of the Republic of Korea. 1928, Charles Lindbergh is presented with the Medal of Honor for the first solo transatlantic flight. 1935, Shah of Iran, Reza Shah Pahlavi, formally asks the international community to call Persia by its native name, Iran. 1937, Ponce Massacre. 19 people in Ponce, Puerto Rico are gunned down by police acting in orders of the U.S.-appointed governor, Blanton Winship. 1943, Wehrmacht officer Rudolf von Gersdorff plots to assassinate Adolf Hitler by using a suicide bomb. But the plan fails, though. Von Gersdorff is able to defuse the bomb in time and avoids all suspicion. 1945, World War II, British troops liberate Mandalay, Burma. Also in 1945, Operation Carthage. Royal Air Force planes bombed Gestapo headquarters in Copenhagen, Denmark. They also accidentally hit a school, killed 125 civilians. 1945, World War II, Bulgaria and the Soviet Union successfully complete their defense of the north bank of the Drava River as the Battle of Transdanubian Hills concludes. 1946, Los Angeles Rams sign Kenny Washington, making him the first African-American player in professional American football since 1933. 1952, Alan Freed presents the Moondog Coronation Ball, the first rock and roll concert in Cleveland, Ohio. 1962, Apartheid, Sharpeville Massacre, South Africa. Police open fire on a group of black South African demonstrators. They kill 69 and wound 180. The 1963, Alcatraz in California closes for the last time. 1965, Ranger program. NASA launches Ranger 9, the last in a series of unmanned lunar space probes. 1965, Martin Luther King Jr. leads 3,200 people on the start of the third and finally successful civil rights march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. 1968, the Battle of Karama in Jordan between the Israeli Defense Force and the combined forces of the Jordanian Armed Forces and the PLO. 1970, the first Earth Day proclamations issued by Joseph Alioto, mayor of San Francisco. 1980, President Jimmy the Peanut Man Carter announces the United States boycott of the 1980 Summer Olympics in Moscow to protest the Soviet-Afghan War. And that's really going to hit them where it hurts. You stop what you're doing or I'll beat myself until I'm bloody. Basically, the philosophy of Jimmy Carter. 1983, first cases of the 1983 West Bank fainting epidemic begins. Israeli and Palestinians accuse each other of poison gas, but the cause is later determined mostly to be psychosomatic. 1986, Debbie Thomas becomes the first African-American to win the World Figure Skating Championship. 1990, Namibia becomes independent after 75 years of South African rule. 1994, United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change enters into force. We got wars raging, people dying, epidemics, but by God, we're going to deal with that climate change. Look at John Kerry, meetings all over the world. He flies on his private plane. Yes, he's really combating global warming. 1999, Bertrand Piccard and Brian Jones become the first to circumvent the Earth in a hot air balloon. 2000, Pope John Paul II makes his first ever pontifical visit to Israel. 2006, the social media site Twitter is founded. And in 2019, the 2019 Zhangshu chemical plant explosion occurs. Kills at least 47, injures 640 others. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. In Portugal, it's Arbor Day. Birth of Benito Juarez, a Fiestas Patrias in Mexico. Christian Feast Day, Benedetta Cambiago Frasinello. Passing of St. Benedict, the Order of St. Benedict, in the pre-1970 calendar. Brilius, Inda of Iran, Nicholas of Flu, Serapon of Thamuas, Thomas Cranmer in the Anglican Church, Education Freedom Day, Harmony Day in Australia, Human Rights Day in South Africa, Independence Day celebrates independence in Namibia from the South Africa mandate in 1990. Internationally, it's International Color Day, International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. International Day of Forest by proclamation of the United Nations General Assembly. In most of the Arab world, it's Mother's Day. In Lesotho, it's National Tree Planting Day. Nuraz in Iran, Kurdistan, and Mesopotamia. Otenia Day in Romania. Rosie the Riveter Day in the U.S. First I've heard of that. Truants Day in Poland and the Faroe Islands. Vernal Equinox. World Down Syndrome Day internationally. World Poetry Day internationally. World Puppetry Day internationally. We got a lot of puppets in Congress. And in Tunisia, Youth Day. All right, let's see what else we got. In 1349, between 100 and 3,000 Jews are killed in Black Death riots in Erfurt, Germany. In 1975, Ethiopia abolishes its monarchy after 3,000 years. 2014, Russia formally annexes the Crimea amid international condemnation. 1413, Henry of Monmouth, Prince of Wales, becomes King Henry V of England. 1681, the Third Exclusion Parliament meets in London. 1788, Ueda Quanio, also known as Gustavus Vasa, a freed slave, petitions King George III and Queen Charlotte to free the enslaved Africans. I don't think George ever got around to doing it. 1791, Captain Hopley Yeaton becomes the first commissioned officer in the Revenue Marine, later known as the Revenue Cutter Service, the forerunner of the modern U.S. Coast Guard. 1821, the first revolutionary act in the monastery of Agia Lavra in the Greek War of Independence. 1824, a fire at the Cairo ammunition dump kills 4,000 horses. 1844 was the original date predicted by William Miller of Massachusetts for the return of Christ and the end of the world. 1859, the Scottish National Gallery opens in Edinburgh. 1859, the Zoological Society of Philadelphia, the first in the U.S., is incorporated. 1860, the U.S. enters into an extradition treaty with Sweden. 1863. There was a naval engagement in Havana, Cuba. USS Henrik Hudson squares off against the Confederate blockade runner, the Wild Pigeon. 1864 was the Battle at Henderson's Hill on the Bayou Rapids in Louisiana. 1865 was the Battle of Bentonville. It ended on this date. It was the last Confederate effort to stop Sherman's march to the sea. 1866, Congress authorizes the National Soldiers Home. 1868 was the first U.S. professional women's club, known as Sororosis, formed in New York City. 1871, Otto von Bismarck was elevated to the rank of first, also known as Prince. 1890, the Austrian Jewish communities are defined by law. 1899, the British and the French enter into an accord over West Africa. In 1907, U.S. sends troops to Honduras to halt the Nicaraguan army takeover. 1909, Germany sends Russia a diplomatic note requesting recognition of the Austrian annexation of Bosnia and Herzegovina and cessation of support to Serbia in the controversy. 1913, a flood in Ohio kills 400. 1917, Loretta Walsh becomes the U.S. Navy's first female petty officer. 1923, U.S. Foreign Minister Charles Hughes refuses to give the USSR recognition. 1924, the Massachusetts Investors Trust becomes the first mutual fund set up in the U.S. 1927, Kuomintang Army conquers Shanghai. The British Marines run. 1933, the day of Potsdam in Nazi Germany. Ceremony to open a new Reichstag after the fire in February. Adolf Hitler and Paul von Hindenburg shake hands in public. The burning of the Reichstag. The young man that was accused of doing it was sandwiched short of a full picnic. He was put up to it, assuming he even did it, by the Nazi officials. 1934, fire destroys Hakodate, Japan, kills about 1,500. 1939, Nazi Germany demands the return of Danzig, also known as Gdansk, from Poland. 1941, in a hard-fought 15th title defense, Joe Louis knocks out Abe Simon in the 13th round at Olympia Stadium in Detroit. He retains his heavyweight boxing crown. 1942, convoy QP-9 departs Great Britain for Murmansk. Also in 1943, an assassination attempt on Adolf Hitler failed. 1944, Eisenhower postpones the invasion of the south of France till after he sees if Normandy is going to be successful. 1945, the first Japanese kamikaze flying bombs attack Okinawa. 1945, during World War II, Allied bombers begin a four-day raid over Germany. 1945, Dutch resistance fighter Heinie Schacht arrested by Nazi police. 1947, President Harry Truman signs the Executive Order 9835. Requires all federal employees to have allegiance to the United States. Duh. It required complete and unswerving loyalty to the United States. 1951, we had 2,900,000 U.S. soldiers in Korea. 1955, Archbishop Makarios of Cyprus expresses his desire that Cyprus join Greece. 1 thing doing here? It's flipping screen after screen after screen. All right, 1952, tornadoes in Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri, Mississippi, Alabama, Kentucky caused 343 deaths. 1958 was the first presentation of West Point's Sylvanus Thayer Award. 1958. Alrighty, I think that pretty much brings our little history segment to an end. Oh, one final thing. In 1970, saw the first San Diego Comic-Con International open at the U.S. Grant Hotel. That is probably one of the best-known Comic-Cons in the country. And I did a lot of Comic-Cons with the books that we write. But COVID kind of brought that to a halt. You know, we've been talking about proof of time travel. Got a little bit more to give you this morning. You know, clearly, our history as a race, the human race, is not what we've been taught in school. We've got evidence of nuclear war, unbelievable high levels of radiation found in ancient skeletons. We've got footprints and rock that predates the existence of the human race. So something is different than what we've been told it is. Now, that also brings up the issue of psychics. I've done a lot of psychic interviews on my shows. And I've had people tell me things just off the top of their head. In fact, one individual I know who is a psychic is so accurate in his predictions that he's actually scary. Now, and even though they're these predictions are made of future events, it doesn't change anything. The events still happen. So you have to ask the question, where would the value of having psychic abilities be evolutionary and survival-wise for that particular individual or for the folks that hear his predictions? If the outcome of events can't be changed by having the talent of knowing what's going to happen, what does that ability achieve? And some of the predictions are so specific, even to naming the names of players involved in future events. Let's look at the book of Enoch. Now, in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 5, it states that the prophet Enoch was translated into the heavens. And it specifically states he didn't see death, which means, as far as everyone knows, he didn't die. We're told he was taken away for many years, over 300, while generations came and went on the earth. And he was taught basic things for the advancement of the human race. Practical things such as reading and writing and metallurgy and other topics. Told the exact length of a year and about the necessity of leap years. In fact, the literature even names the angels that taught him these things. And then we're told that Enoch was returned to earth to spread the knowledge. Now, if the angels that were discussed were actually aliens, they may have just wanted to jumpstart human civilization. But if that's the case, why? And what's more, how do we account for him being gone for so long? Now, according to ancient alien theorists, it's due to the time dilation effect at the speed of light, and his trip aboard an alien vessel was so close to the speed of light that time for him slowed down. Continued at a normal pace on the Earth, though. Now, even though that is a very logical argument, it does have a couple of flaws. The first question is, why have Enoch leave the region of Earth space at all? Why not have the teachers that worked with him be on board the vessel and teach him there? That would seem to be a much easier proposition, easier than traveling all the way to the stars and back at just near light speed. And the second problem with that theory is almost all experts in regard to UFOs say they seem to violate the known laws of physics. And they can travel at impossible speeds and don't seem to be subject to the laws of inertia. All methods of motivation considered by these experts seem to preclude the need for alien ships to travel below the speed of light. Their argument is that somehow these alien craft seem to be able to circumvent the speed barrier, either by warping or folding space or through some transdimensional means of travel. So the idea of time dilation having such a pronounced effect on delaying Enoch's return, time simply doesn't seem very credible at this point. You can't have it both ways. Aliens who warp space and dash around the universe at super light speed, and aliens who are also subject to the law of speed of light and have to creep between the stars while years roll by on Earth. The two concepts can't be... There's no middle ground, so to speak. It would seem more likely Enoch was simply moved from one time to another and released into the new timeline on Earth several hundred years into his own future. Now, if time travelers want to alter events, change the future, speed up human development, advance humanity more quickly to alter a future outcome, then what better way to do it than just simply set Enoch down several hundred years into the future? Either way, whether it was aliens or time travel, he did end up 300 years into his own future. Then we have the prophet Isaiah. He foretold the end of Babylon, and he was just a little bit too accurate for comfort. Recorded history tells us Cyrus conquered Babylon in the 6th century BC. And Babylon the Great ceased to be a major power after that. In Isaiah chapter 13, verse 19, it specifically states, Babylon, the jewel of kingdoms, the glory of the Babylonians' pride will be overthrown by God like Sodom and Gomorrah. And he even went on to say that Babylon eventually be reduced to swampland. Oddly enough, a good deal of the ancient ruins of that once mighty city are now difficult to excavate because they're now dwell below the current water table, just as Isaiah predicted. In Isaiah chapter 14, verse 23, he said, I'll turn her into a place for owls and into swampland. I'll sweep her with the broom of destruction, so said the Lord Almighty. Then we've got the prophet Ezekiel, one of the more accurate prophets of the Old Testament. He predicted Babylon would lay siege to the city kingdom of Tyre, destroy it utterly, flatten it. Just over 10 years after he said that, this actually happened. He also said many nations would assail Tyre. Historically, that was also true. Ultimately, it was destroyed, never rebuilt. Once again, we've got an amazingly accurate prediction of the future. In addition, although both Isaiah and Ezekiel attributed this ability to see the future to God, since he's the only one who can provide such divinations to humanity, this doesn't really seem to be 100% accurate. Once more, you have to ask how Ezekiel knew all this. According to him, God told him. Yet another case of somebody informing a prophet of the future. So was it God? Was it aliens? Was it time travelers? And if aliens were indeed the culprits, how did they know the future unless they had time travel as well? Wouldn't it be more likely to be somebody who could know the future such as time travelers? Logic and the principle of Occam's razor would seem to make this the most likely and simplest explanation. Otherwise, if we don't agree with the idea that God or gods are responsible, we have to go with time-traveling aliens, so either way, time travel's involved. And under the concept of if you hear hoofbeats, think horses and not zebras, human time travelers would be the simplest answer. Now, in all these discussions, we haven't made mention of the predictions of the book of Revelations. That's the last book of the New Testament. Because, let's face it, they're somewhat vague in nature. So couched in symbolism are these predictions that they often could well mean anything to anybody. They're open to numerous interpretations and often seem to be the case with various interpreters. I also don't discuss Nostradamus. You know, frankly, the quatrains, he had to be worried about being accused of sorcery. So he put his predictions into what are called quatrains. Now, that isn't to say they may not have accurate predictions in them, but if they can be subject to so many interpretations, and a lot of folks do interpret the quatrains differently, it's not really something we need to look at in discussing time travel. And although many of the predictions of the seer Mother Shipton have shown themselves to be accurate, since it can't be ascertained which prophecies were truly hers and which were added later on, we have to put her to the side. But we will say, regardless of who made the prophecies, Mother Shipton, or whoever wrote the later work, made prophecies uncannily close to the truth. So they can't be dismissed out of hand because, regardless of the source, they were very accurate at the time. And again, did somebody give the information to Mother Shipton or to the author of the work that quotes her? And of course, there's also a number of other biblical prophets, because generally their prophecies concern religious events in the future and not enough data to really confirm one way or the other. Now let's talk about, now not every prophet was biblical. There were a number of non-biblical prophets in history. How about the Sibyls as oracles? Tiburtine Sibyl in 380 A.D. said there will arise a king of the Greeks whose name is Constans. He'll be king of the Romans and the Greeks. This prophecy was made by a Sibyl, a prophetess, actually predicted an emperor who wouldn't exist for another 400 years. And not only did she predict his existence, she named the people he'd rule, most amazingly of all. The name she gave for him was correct. We know him as the Emperor Constantine, founded a new city to rule from Constantinople, or today's Istanbul in Turkey. That was the Eastern Roman Empire. It's also said the birth of Jesus was also predicted by the Sibyl. So how did the Sibyl know these things? And this wasn't the only Sibyl who was able to accurately foretell coming events. The Sibyls of ancient Greece, who worshiped multiple gods and goddesses, did the same thing. And just as a side note, the Sibyl also predicted that civilization will end soon, even possibly in her own lifetime. The date that they named was 2012. They may have missed the mark on that one. The question is, how could they be so accurate about an event so far in the future? Well, the obvious answer, of course, would be time travel. There's another example of someone who knew things he shouldn't have. How about Merlin the Wizard? Or, as he was originally known, Mirrodin, made some equally amazing prophecies, some of which are of particular interest today, and especially in regard to those folks who worry about the alleged 2012 doomsday scenario. Among other things he predicted, he said a time would come when monks would be forced to marry. Subsequently, centuries after he made that statement, Henry VIII dissolved the monasteries and decreed that priests could marry. Mirrodin also predicted the River Thames would someday encompass London. Already, massive flood barriers have been built, but with rising sea levels due to greenhouse gases, this protection is limited in time and scope. He may ultimately be right. He also said, at that time shall the stones speak and the area toward the Gaelic coast be contracted into a narrow space. On each bank shall one man hear another, and the soil of the island will be enlarged. Well, this seems to be a rather amazingly accurate prediction. Our modern phones use silicon chips or stones, and the English have no trouble talking to the Gaelic coast or France as we now know it. And the area toward the Gaelic coast does indeed have a narrow space, a tunnel, or the channel, as it's now known, connecting England and France. And what's more, a great deal of earth was removed from the tunnel. This created new land along the immediate coast there. It was that earth that was removed was used as fill. It would seem hard to get much more accurate in predictions than these, especially when they were made over 1,000 years ago. Either the gods in this case, since Merlin wasn't a Christian, gave him this information, or somebody else did, and it was somebody with a good knowledge of the far future of those times. But once more, we have to narrow the sources down to either alien, human time travelers, or alien-capable time travel. And although the answer could be any one of these three, if you look again at Occam's razor, for the simplest is human time travel. Well, it would appear that people throughout the ages somehow had access to knowledge of coming events and could make accurate predictions based on that knowledge. And the access to such information would be restricted to just Jews and Christians and Greeks and Romans or Welsh Druids, but all of them and more. And we have to conclude that either all these prophets and seers of old really could see the future, and the far future at that, or else somebody informed them of what was going to happen. Again, the power to predict events centuries in the future and even name names would seem to have little evolutionary benefit for the human species' survival, especially if those events couldn't be changed. But what would be the point of evolving a faculty or such a talent if it doesn't help you to survive? In evolution, the process of natural selection is all about survival. Furthermore, since time travel seems well within the possibility of the new physics, we have to go with the simplest answer, and it comes from that source. Rather than evoke the supernatural and the metaphysical, it would seem the simpler explanation would be accept the possibility of time travel. Now, this isn't exactly the sort of thing scientists say we should see in our history if time travels have interfered with it. Besides finding physical objects out of place for their time, anachronisms, as we've discussed previously, wouldn't we also have instances of people knowing things about the future events they shouldn't be able to know because time travelers told them? And frankly, doesn't world history just abound with such prophets and seers? So beside the physical oddities dug up from the past, we've got these items about prophets and seers in our recorded history as well. They help support the idea of time travel and time travelers do exist. People seem to have known throughout our history what was coming. We believe their source of information may well have been time travelers. It's just the simplest and best choice. Well, it was the Prince of Persia who said, "Most people think time is like a river that flows swift and sure in one direction." But he said he could say for a fact they're wrong. Time's an ocean in a storm. It goes round and round and back and forth. We've already talked about a preponderance of evidence of physical objects, which certainly support the idea that time travel has occurred, especially since no other explanation appears to be as logical. We also have seen evidence that people have been told or shown future events, events that apparently couldn't be changed in spite of the prior knowledge. So there are two legs to support the idea of time travel and time travelers existing. So let's look at historical events that seem to indicate somebody's been manipulating them. Now, the test for such events is simple. The recorded interference had to seem strange, that is, very out of the ordinary. It had to seem to have some sort of divine aspect to it, some supernatural, otherworldly feature, and what's referred to by people of the times in this way. Finally, in order for such an event to be included, it had to result in a massive change in history by the event having happened. I mean, boiling it down to the simplest terms, it had to be a major, pivotal event, one occurring at a nexus point in history, where the results would be a massive change in the direction of history. Let's talk about once more turning to the Old Testament of the Bible, which is one of the first texts of recorded history. Let's talk about Joshua and the city of Jericho. We know much of the Bible was written well after the events occurred and seen through the eyes of very religious authors. And that would mean the retelling of such events could be, and perhaps often was, warped by the religious eye of the beholder. Nevertheless, such recounting could be used to form some simple conclusions. If we take out the more extremely religious overtones. For example, according to the Bible, Joshua led his people against the city of Jericho. Now, according to the story as laid out in the Bible, only after a number of days of having his army marching around the city walls did they finally, on the seventh day, after marching seven times more around the city and having blared their trumpets and given out a tremendous war cry, did the walls collapse. Now, the walls of the city were supposed to have crumbled to rubble at this point. In addition, it said that God hardened the hearts of the defenders, as in it said in Joshua chapter 11, verse 20, for it was the Lord himself who hardened their hearts to wage war against Israel, so he might destroy them utterly, exterminating them without mercy. Now, biblical scholars have always had a problem with why God would do this. Why would he deliberately harden the defenders' hearts so that Joshua's army would have an excuse to utterly wipe out every man, woman, and child, and even the pets, domesticated animals, found within the walls of that city? Now, on the face of it, this was seen to be genocide. And it's not the first instance in recorded biblical history of genocide. God apparently has hardened many hearts in the past, including that of Pharaoh. Now, it seems that this was deliberate in order that events consequently unfold a certain way. For example, if the Pharaoh had given in to Moses sooner, then subsequent happenings would have occurred differently. If the Canaanites had been willing to surrender, then succeeding events would have been very different as well. So the particular sequence of events in order to achieve a specific desired outcome seems to have been very important to the entity referred to by the Israelites as God. Or was it really God? Maybe it was the time travelers who needed so specific a sequence of events to unfold to achieve the desired results. With Jericho, combined with the collapse of the walls and this deliberate hardening of the defenders' hearts, it looks as if the Lord had a very specific purpose, a very measured way of interfering in political events at the times. I mean, the purpose was clear. He might destroy them totally, exterminating them without mercy. But what was accomplished? The Israelites would have achieved the same result if the folks manning the city of Jericho just surrendered. You know, interference doesn't get much more specific than that. And we know Jericho really existed from the evidence of archaeological excavations. So the city was real. Seems as if somebody had a very well-defined agenda regarding it, if you believe the biblical text. Somebody, it seems, had been manipulating events. And as many religious scholars feel, it's hard to imagine the real God performing such an atrocious act, perpetrating such a massacre upon an innocent people by design. Not God being responsible for this, then who? Ancient aliens? Well, maybe so, but how would they have had such intimate knowledge of what the results would be of their interference unless they had also had some way of knowing the future outcome? So once again, whether it's aliens or humans, it would seem somebody was deliberately manipulating our history and knew the future. As a side note, this event could be construed as an act of genocide, of course. An ancient alien theorist would point out this is to support their point of view about genetic selection of humans. But we're talking about a very small population here, one statistically simply not significant. And why would aliens tell the followers of Joshua to murder even the pets and domesticated animals, which are normally considered part of the booty of war for the victors? Well, if culling the human species to breed for a certain type of human, why would this last part be necessary, the complete destruction of the animals? Well, the initial answer, of course, is it is not. So the answer, it was the aliens who did this interfering, at least in this case, just didn't make a whole lot of sense. But if we look at it as having been time travelers, it makes a little bit more sense. They were willing to transplant the Jewish culture in its entirety, not just racially. I meant every aspect of it, even the types of animals used, had to be very carefully considered. So a terrible replacement took place in order to achieve this result. The Canaanites, bagged baggage, animals, and children were out, and the children of Israel and their animals were in. So the end result that was hoped to be achieved had to somehow at least be anticipated by whoever was responsible. Then in 329 B.C., Alexander the Great was harassed by aerial craft and weren't just content to observe, as alien UFOs are said to do. Instead, these airborne vessels seem to have deliberately interfered to change the course of history, and on a very intimate level. As recounted by his own historians, two strange aircraft harassed not only Alexander's army, but his war elephants and horses as well. In a state of hysteria and panic, his men rebelled. And for a time, they refused to cross the Indus River into India. Later, with orders finally restored, his army did obey him at last and crossed the river, but this event seemed to spell a major turning point in history. It was the end of Alexander's incredible and seemingly relentless advance across the east. This was the furthest he ever reached in that direction, was the high water mark of his territorial conquest and ambitions in that regard. After this particular incident, he turned his attention to the west. Whatever these strange aircraft were, and they were described by the historians as flying shields, they had successfully destroyed his seemingly endless march to the east, and they quite apparently did it on purpose. Now, if this were the action of aliens, why would they want to do this? Try deliberately to change the course of history by deliberately interfering. Well, it doesn't get much more deliberate than diving directly down at Alexander's army and stampeding his war efforts. War elephants. I don't know why I keep calling that something else. I mean, no alien would have a reason for such an action. Unless they had a desired outcome, one they were convinced their actions would precipitate. It seemed that whoever did this knew what the consequences would be, and that they had changed the course of coming events and profoundly changed history. Alexander's empire would go no further to the east, and he'd later die back in his own region. So the question has to be asked, what would have happened if he'd continued his march eastward and hadn't died in the west? Or maybe in some place like China, maybe years later. If this had happened, the world would have been very different today. So the actions of the airborne craft had a profound effect on the course of Western civilization and all future events. I mean, frankly, this was no less than a major turning point in our history, a nexus, if you will. And it seems not only been interfered with, but manipulated. Alien time travelers or human time travelers, whoever it may have been, knew their actions would alter the future in a big way. This means they knew what the outcome would be ahead of time, or at least had a good idea what it might be. And that wasn't the last involvement. Just under 10 years later, Alexander was doing battle, attacking the Phoenician city of Tyre. While this was happening, participants on both sides of the battle saw a truly bizarre event that altered not only the course of the battle, but history as well. Strange craft appeared in the sky and fired some kind of ray at a beleaguered city's walls. And when this happened, one of the ramparts promptly collapsed. At that point, Alexander's troops entered the city and easily captured it. Once more, we seem to have a direct and deliberate interference. It would seem obvious that whoever did it wanted Alexander to take the city. So at this point, you have to ask why. Why would they want this unless they were deliberately manipulating events for definite reasons to achieve some kind of desired outcome? This means that whether they were alien or human time travelers, they must know what outcomes they wanted and exactly how to go about achieving them. Unlike the ancient alien theorists who say aliens are genetically manipulating the human race, this seems much more about manipulating the course of human events, changing the course of history, so to speak. And there are many such cases of direct influence in our timeline, and we'll talk about some more of them shortly. But to stay in some kind of chronological order, at this point we have to discuss some cases that by their very nature are odd. And they're odd enough that they're considered candidates for a form of time travel interference. Let's talk about the Black Death, for example. One of the best things that ever happened to Europe, according to a number of folks, elevated the worth of human labor, reduced environmental degradation, and produced the Renaissance. Now, ancient alien theorists believed that extraterrestrials may have attempted to control our population or weed out undesirables, genetic traits in humanity with plagues. And this could well be the case, but it seems an unlikely approach for them to take. Disease seems to be an unreliable method for the best of to control the purpose of breeding experiments. They can mutate and spread easily, as does the influenza or flu, as well as many other diseases, so attack even the supposed beneficiaries of such a decimation for the rest of the population. The ones you want to survive and prosper could end up dying as well. Saying the disease is also an unreliable weapon because it has too great a chance of backfiring on the originator. So you couldn't just be sure one race of humanity would remain unaffected in such an instance. So it could well be if the extraterrestrial breeding program was to winnow out those with undesirable traits, such a method would hardly be the one for them to use since it would be manifestly too unsafe to means to use. Now, they might use such a method for population control to knock back a population, but once again, humans being what they are, it doesn't take us long to overcome such a setback. I mean, let's face it, despite all the plagues humanity's ever endured, all the setbacks they've caused, we now number over 7 billion. So if spreading plagues was an extraterrestrial means of population control, it does not seem to have been too effective. And there would seem to be convincing evidence that just this sort of thing might have taken place throughout the centuries, that there might have been outside influence on humanity through plagues in this respect. But if that's the case, why? Why would aliens or time travelers want to do such a thing? Well, I mean, what would be the purpose? I mean, once again, if we look at the principle of Occam's razor, the simplest answer is usually the correct answer. If using plagues for breeding purposes is unwieldy with unpredictable results, and if using them as a means of population control simply hadn't seemed to be effective, we're left with one other very simple answer. It seemed that whoever might be inducing plagues, and we do think there's evidence that they were induced in some instances, some plagues must have been to influence history. And that would seem to be the only valid purpose. I mean, I don't mean all plagues fall into this category. Some are undoubtedly natural, but we're talking about plagues that seem suspicious in origin and very timely or untimely in their results and their consequences. And it may be diseases not very good for breeding purposes or population control, but they do have an enormous effect on history, on how events turn out. And we're going to talk about that in our next show. So until tomorrow at this same time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.